To the book of Ruth. Our young people are going to be studying Ruth this coming year in the Bible Bowl, and I think it's good for us to be studying this book as well from time to time, and it worked out tonight. Last week I did a character study on Apollos, and this week I wanted to do one on Boaz, a character that is a lesser known one in the book of Ruth. We tend to focus on Ruth, maybe Naomi. And Boaz is just kind of the man involved here. We might think of Boaz as like this story I heard about Harry. Harry was pulling out on a Sunday to go to church, and it was in his two-seat convertible. And he's driving to church, and he sees huddled there underneath an umbrella as it starts to rain. It starts to rain, three people. And there was first person, there was a little old lady, always faithful to church, but she had bad arthritis, but she insisted on getting out and taking the bus to church. And second person there was the general doctor in town who had helped save Harry's life, had helped diagnose him with a rare disease, and he owed his life to him for help saving his life. The third person there was Judith, whom Harry had a crush on, but he hadn't had the courage to ask her out on a date yet. Sweet young lady that he really liked. And so what does Harry do? Remember, he has a two-seat car, and how can he get all these people to church? They're huddled underneath the umbrella, waiting at the bus stop. Well, Harry decides that he would stop and offer the keys to the doctor. So the doctor and the sweet little older lady with arthritis can ride on the church. And he decides that he'll wait at the bus underneath the umbrella cuddled with Judith. Well, sometimes we view Boaz like Harry in this story. Harry kind of figured out how it worked out for him, fortunately, so that he got the girl and he got to help out everybody else in the community and pay everybody else back. Well, obviously that's a fictitious story, but it kind of illustrates the way Boaz is kind of viewed. Boaz comes along in this story. He's just kind of minding his own business. And he has the opportunity to help out a widow lady in Naomi who has had a hard time. He has the opportunity to do good to his community, like the doctor and further pay back all those that have helped him and his family and heritage. But in the meantime, he gets the girl. And we look at Ruth as this beautiful young lady that he gets to marry. It's like everything works out fortunate and well for Boaz. And Boaz kind of comes off as that character. And while that can be the case, I want you to see tonight that Boaz isn't just riding in his two-seat convertible and just comes out to be Mr. Fortunate. But that Boaz is someone who is blessed because of his decisions. He's blessed because of his decisions. And he's someone that is very spiritually minded and someone that is going to be called a very worthy man. And so let's think about this story this evening. First of all, Boaz, I forgot to reset that. Seth, my clicker's still not working. Unplug it and plug it back in and it might start working, or you can advance it for me. Boaz is someone who is a redeemer. And I want to briefly give you the story of Ruth. I hope that most people know that story. But if you will remember, the story begins in chapter 1 with Naomi and Elimelech, her husband, going to the far land of Midian because there was a famine in the land of Israel. They were from Bethlehem, and they go to Midian, and when they're in Midian, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, and her two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, both die. But they had taken daughter-in-laws from the land of Midian, Orpah and Ruth. Naomi decides that she's heard that the famine has gone away, and so she decides she's going to return back home. And now she says, "No longer call me Naomi, but call me Mara, for I am very bitter." She is very grief-stricken because the Lord God has dealt very harshly with me. And she's very bitter and upset. Orpah, she tells both the daughter-in-laws to stay back in Midian. But Ruth decides to cling to her. And of course, that's where we have that famous text in verse 16 and 17 where she says that, you know, do not invite me and treat me to leave you. But she's going to stay with her till death. And her God will be her God. And so Boaz, or Naomi and Ruth then return to Bethlehem. And while they're there, they are destitute in chapter 2 and struggling with financial problems. And so they have to resort to gleaning in the fields. And Ruth goes out and she is going to glean for grain in the fields, and she's going to gather grain. And the field that she goes to is Boaz's field. And Boaz happens to be, and this is an important part of this story, happens to be a near kinsman. A near kinsman. And a near kinsman was an Old Testament figure that was established by the law, which had several functions. And the kinsman redeemer would, for example, if your relative was murdered, then the redeemer would have the responsibility of going after that murderer. In our story, the book of Ruth, the redeemer has the responsibility of redeeming the land, buying back the land that had been taken from the family or lost from the family. And it seems connected with that redeemer custom is what we call the leveret custom of going in to the widow and marrying the widow, going into her and producing a child, an heir, in honor of the dead. All right, so it would not be your child, it would be the child of the deceased, even though physically, biologically, it's the child of the man who has redeemed her. And so, chapter 2, she is gleaning in this, and she meets Boaz. And in chapter 3, Ruth is going to invite Boaz to be her redeemer. And we'll talk more about that later, but chapter 3, she goes to the threshing floor and lays down and is going to invite him to be her redeemer. And then chapter 4, they go to the city gate. Boaz was not the closest relative, and they had to meet with the other close relative, and he rejected, chose not to be the redeemer, and so Boaz could redeem her. He does redeem her. He redeems the widow, Naomi, marries Ruth, and buys back the land. And then the story ends by being able to tell us very significantly that he produced an heir and that Boaz is going to be the great-grandfather, the last word in the book, of David. Boaz was the father of Obed, and Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse was the father of David. And so let's notice some lessons. Let's notice some lessons from this. Seth, can you help me out? Click. Can you advance it? There we go. Did I go past one slide? Go back. Can you go back to... We don't need to go back to singing. The story of Ruth, that's where I was wanting. All right, that's the kinsman redeemers. Thank you. And then we'll go forward in a minute. So those are the two verses, Deuteronomy 25, Leviticus 25, that describe the Levirate in Deuteronomy 25 and the kinsman redeemer custom of redeeming back the land. And it seems by Ruth that those had been merged and it was a part of the same process. All right, now let's go ahead. And notice that in chapter 2, verse 1 then, that Boaz is called a worthy man. A worthy man. Let's read that verse. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech. This term worthy is significant because it means someone of moral worth, someone of integrity and strength and virtue. It can carry the idea of wealth, And with Boaz, it certainly probably does. He was a wealthy man. And it influences and someone who is of high status in the community, who had a high stature. He's shown throughout the text to be a worthy man. He loves the Lord and wants to do what the Lord to do the Lord's will. Chapter 3, verses 12 through 14. Notice how it describes him in that text as well. Now it is true that I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I'll redeem you. Lie down until the morning. Notice that he was a man that was obligated to family and wanted to be loyal to others. He didn't want to just step in and take what wasn't his. He wanted to follow the law closely. Now look at chapter 3, verse 11, because Boaz is described with this same term, a worthy man, as Ruth is described as a worthy woman in chapter 3, verse 11. We read this. It says, I will do all this for you that you ask, for my fellow townspeople know that you are a worthy woman. She was a woman of high moral character. She was a woman of respect, a woman of influence, a woman of generosity. Now, turn to chapter 4, verse 11. Because after they are married, and after they are going to be involved in this marriage ceremony and the redemption and all that takes place there, notice what it says. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and went into her and conceived, and the Lord gave her conception. Now, look at verse number 11. Then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you act worthily. May you act worthily. If you study, and I like the ESV version because in this case, because it shows us in the English the same word usage by translating it in the same word in English. Because in Hebrew, this is all the same word. Boaz is someone who is described as worthy. Ruth is described as someone who is worthy. And then we have the verb form used in chapter 4, verse 11. They are to act worthy. Now, we think a lot about this story as a love story. And really, it's not much of a love story when you really study it out. Because really, it's about two people who are determined to obey God and who are loyal to family and culture. But there's a good lesson for our love stories out there today. I don't know how many we have here tonight that are dating and considering looking for people to date. But I think this is a great passage to influence those who are single. Number one, if you're single, your focus should be on being worthy. And I mean worthy in the sense of this Hebrew word. You be a moral character. You be someone of high integrity and value. Someone who is moral in your value. In fact, this is the same term, this term worthy, is the same term that's used to describe the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31. It's the same term that's used in Proverbs 12, verse 4, when it says an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. It talks about the worthy wife. You see, we as individuals need to make sure that we focus on being worthy. And then we need to look to find someone else who is of a worthy character, who is someone of value and worth in their integrity. And then, it takes it one step farther. Once you become a couple, once you get married, you need to live out that in acting worthy. So you need to be someone who is a worthy character to start out with, but then once you become married, or you know, once you become a couple, you need to act worthy, and you need to treat one another in a way that is consistent with your values. And so this is an important, I don't think it's any accident that the Holy Spirit used this same word throughout, once to describe Boaz, once to describe Ruth, and once to describe them as a married couple. Right, now let's notice Boaz. I want to notice six things about his character that we can learn for our life. And this is Father's Day, and so this is another man influential lesson for a character study for us as men, but also some lessons for women. Number one, Boaz was a worthy man because he was spiritually minded. He was spiritually minded. Notice chapter 2, verse 4. When he meets Ruth and he speaks to Ruth, notice what is said on this occasion. He says, about halfway through that verse, that the Lord should be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless you. Look at chapter 2, verse number 14, when he talks about this same concept. In the mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here and eat the bread and the wine and your morsel on the side. And she came and ate. And then notice what he says. He's talking, excuse me, let me read. I'm having a little trouble reading out of that. Look at chapter 2, verse number 14 there and 12. Verse 12, the Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Boaz was one that he was, as we see his dialogue with Ruth, referring to spiritual things. May the Lord repay you. May the Lord bless you. He was spiritually minded. And verse number 12 is a key verse. Because it's going to be interesting that he says, may the Lord repay you as you have come to seek refuge under the God of Israel, under his wings of protection. And what's going to be ironic about this is Boaz is going to be the means that Ruth is going to have the protection of God. And so his prayer, this is kind of fascinating, his prayer for her is answered in himself. You know, sometimes you are the answer to your prayers. Sometimes you are the answer to your prayers. And when you are praying and wanting others to be blessed, sometimes you need to ask yourself the question, what can I do? What can I do to help bring about that blessing? In Boaz's case, he's going to be the redeemer. Number two, notice in chapter 2, verses 5 through 9, that he was protective in his nature. And as a man, as a father, as a husband, we need to care about protecting those under our care. Look at verse 4. Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless you. And Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, she is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. So she came, and she was continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. And Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? When you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young man had drawn. We're told that oftentimes there would be women of immoral character who would kind of follow around these men who were out working in the fields. You can imagine that. That tends to be the case, you know, that prostitutes and other loose women would be by these men who were making money out working in the fields. And, of course, those young men who didn't have families would avail themselves of their services. What Boaz says is, you don't go with those young men. I've told the young men in my care not to mess with you. And some may have said, well, that's just because he was trying to protect her for himself. But I don't think so. I think Boaz was probably an older gentleman. And I think Boaz understood the dangers. I think he understood the dangers for a young woman who had come from the far country of Moab. We might assume that she was a nice-looking lady. And he was protective of her. He was concerned about her. I think it's important to note that in the book of Judges, and in this time period, women were not valued very highly. They were often abused and mistreated. And even in this situation, Naomi and Ruth are hungry, and Boaz is going to be the one that's going to provide for them and make sure they are protected and provided for in their care. And I think it's important for us to understand as men that we need to be protective. We need to be protective of the emotions, of the safety, of the feelings of our wives and of our daughters, and of the women that we care about and that we are in relationship with in the church. That we need to understand that as a culture, we may be lowering the protective function of men, but the Bible emphasizes that men are supposed to be the one to provide that protection and that care for ladies. Number three, Boaz was one who was providing. If you continue to read verses 13 through 19 here, you'll see that Boaz is one who is going to provide for them. Look at verses 13. So Boaz, she found favor in his eyes. And I'm going to skip on down to verse 14. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers and he passed to her roasted grain. She ate until she was satisfied and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed the young men, saying, "Let her glean among the sheaves and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean and do not rebuke her." Verse 17, so she gleaned in the field until evening, and when she beat out what she had gleaned, it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. Notice that Boaz goes above and beyond the law of Moses. Now, the law of Moses provided for them providing for some of the poor by leaving what fell. So they were to gather these things into bundles, into sheaves. And if parts of it fell, as they were harvesting it, they were to leave that as a way of a welfare system, of a benevolent system for those who were poor. And the poor had to go out and gather those up. But here he tells the young men, pull some out from the bushels, the bundles, the sheaves that are already there. And don't just let her go out and glean in the field, but let her glean through the sheaves. But also notice that Boaz did not stop her from working. She worked until evening, and we're going to find out that she works through all the barley and the wheat harvest. So for several months, she's working, and she's doing something to provide for Naomi and for herself. But notice that Boaz was generous. He was providing. Number four characteristic of Boaz that made him a worthy man was that he was a pure man. In chapter 3, we have this story that some people want to make out today to be a seduction. And it is an odd story. I think we have to admit that. Where Boaz is on the winnowing barley floor, threshing out the grain. And Naomi instructs him to wash herself, to wash herself and anoint herself and to put on her cloak and go down to the threshing floor. And to not let him know that she's there until he has gone to sleep, till he has laid down. And then in verse 4, when he lies down, you go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. Apparently, this was some kind of a cultural norm, of an invitation in the feet being a symbol of submission, you know, at his feet. That she's saying, take me in, redeem me, I want to be your servant, your wife, I want to be in your family. I want you to be my redeemer. And it seems that this was a way that of her doing this in a culturally accepted way for the woman who was poor, who was a widow, she was a widow, to go about beseeching the Redeemer to do his function. And the Redeemer had this function of redeeming the land and redeeming her. And Boaz is going to be very careful on the threshing floor. After he had been there and he wakes up, verse 8, at midnight the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, who are you? And she answered, now, first of all, can you imagine? He was probably a little startled. You know, a woman was laying at his feet, and his first thing he said, well, you know, who are you? Now, Boaz might have been married. So he was concerned about this. He said, who are you? And she said, I am Ruth, your servant. And now notice what word she uses. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. Now, what did Boaz say in chapter 2? That you have come to seek refuge in the God of Israel, and may He cover you with His wings, is the idea. May you find that protection. And now she says, spread your wings. And wings is a play on words from the same term, involves the idea of garment or blanket. And so she was underneath the blanket, and she's saying, spread your blanket, spread your garment, spread your wings, your protective covering over me. What is significant here, first of all, for our study of Boaz, is that he was a sexually pure and upright man. Notice what he does when she asks him this. Verse 13. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then, as the Lord lives, I will redeem you, but lie down until morning. So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And that's not trying to cover up what happened here, but rather it is to keep down any rumors or any misunderstandings. And he said to her, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. And he said, bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out. So she held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her, and she went into the city, once again being generous. Those who want to make this out into some kind of seduction or in some kind of immorality miss out on the overall message of the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth is extolling the virtue of Boaz and the virtue of Ruth. To have them doing something immoral at the crucial point of the book would be to go against the overall story. It would be a great injustice to this example of Boaz and Ruth. And so I think it's very understandable that nothing inappropriate went on here. And Boaz was very careful to make sure nothing inappropriate went on. And he was a pure man. He was a pure man. And if we are going to be worthy men, we're going to have to be pure in our character as well. From the things that we watch, from our protection from pornography, from how we view and look at other women, whether we flirt or whether we inappropriately act toward other women. We need to be pure. And if we're a single man or woman, we need to make sure a part of our worthiness, a part of us being prepared for marriage and being a candidate that others would want to look at for marriage, is that we're pure. We're pure in our character and pure in our morality. But number five, Boaz was also an obedient man. Now, once again, you might assume, I think rightly so, that Boaz wanted to redeem her. But notice that he said, "There is a redeemer nearer than I," in verse 12. And he said, "Remain here and I will find out in the morning if he will do it." And then chapter 4, it tells the story about when he goes to the gate and he gets this man, this nearer redeemer, and he asks him to redeem her. For example, look at chapter 4, verse 3. He said to the redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to her relative Elimelech. So I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know that there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you." Now, he's initially going to say, "I will redeem it." But when he finds out that Ruth, verse number 5, goes with it, and you will also get and acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, the redeemer said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance." Let me flesh this out a little bit. This man had an obligation to redeem her. By the law of Moses, he was supposed to redeem her. And the purpose of the law was to, number one, provide for the widow. Number two, provide for the future lineage of the deceased man. And number three, to provide that family is always going to have land to buy back that land, so that family will have some land to provide for their own cell phone, so that the land doesn't just get bought up by a lot of people and then someone is destitute and a family does not have land. It was a way of keeping things equitable and fair. And this man was supposed to redeem her. But what does he say? "I'm not going to redeem her because it will impair my own inheritance." There's two things that were going on there. Possibly two things. One, he might have been thinking about his wife and his kids. If I spend the money to buy this land, and if I have an heir with Ruth, he's going to lose that land because that land will go to the heir that he has with Ruth. And he would spend money from his family, money from his own children would get to purchase this for the Ruth and Elimelech's family, and it would hurt his own children. His wife might have been elbowing him saying, "You don't need that young woman too. You can't have her." It also could have just been a situation where it was going to harm his family financially. And here's the point that I want you to see. Once again, we don't know a lot of the details. But Boaz was willing to be obedient. He was willing to take the risk of buying this land, impairing his own future wealth, impairing the future inheritance of maybe any children he already had, because it was the right thing to do. Now, this is a shameful thing if you don't do this, and that involves this exchanging of sandals. And in the Leviticus passage and Deuteronomy passage, it talks about, in one of those passages, about how if you want to do this, that the widow can spit in your face, and things of that nature, and there's a shame to this, spitting on the sandal on the face. And, And so you were supposed to be obedient to this. Boaz was one who was obedient. Obedience, if we're going to be worthy, cannot be something that we take a buffet approach to. We can't pick and choose. Well, I want to be obedient on this issue, but I don't want to be obedient on this one. If this one is going to cost me money, I don't want to be obedient on that one. If this one's going to affect my family, I don't want to be obedient on that one. You see, obedience means we obey no matter what, even when it hinders our family or it's hard for our family. We have to be willing to obey. A worthy man puts obedience above money. And then finally, number six, and I think this is very significant about Boaz, is that he was a reflection of Christ. I looked at chapter 2, verse 12. I focused in on this verse earlier, but I want to read it one more time. Where it says here that Boaz, he says, I want this under whose wings you have come to take refuge. And then chapter 3, verse 9, she says, spread your wings over me. So Boaz says, may God be a refuge to you. She says, you be the refuge to me. You be my wings over me. And what is he? He is a redeemer. Now, I don't think we should miss out on that. What does the New Testament call Jesus? In numerous passages, he is our redeemer. He is the one who spreads his wings, his garment over us, his blood over us. He redeems us. Boaz is a prefigure of Jesus. Just as Boaz is taking in Ruth, the Moabitess, as he is redeeming her and buying her back, and that's leading through the descendants of David on down to the descendants of Jesus. So he is foreshadowing what Jesus will do for us. When we are baptized, we are in many ways saying what Ruth said to Boaz. Spread your wings over me. Cover up my sin. Redeem me. Redeem me. I want to read we could look at Galatians chapter 3 or other Ephesians chapter 1. But I want to read Romans chapter 3. Romans chapter 3 as an illustration of this point. Verse 23. Notice how it describes Jesus as our Redeemer. Verse 23. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God and are justified by His grace as a gift through the redemption. Through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus, whom God put forward as a propitiation by His blood to be received by faith. You see, Boaz does for Ruth what Jesus does for all of us. And so when we think about a worthy man, and what is a worthy man? A worthy man is someone who is spiritually minded, who thinks about spiritual things and uses the Lord in his daily vocabulary. Someone who is protective of the women that he has a care for. And someone who is providing, who understands he has a responsibility to provide for his family. And provide and be generous to others. Someone who is pure in his morality and his sexuality. Someone who is obedient. And someone who is a reflection of Jesus. You know, all of us are supposed to be reflections of Jesus as we work and live in this world. If you're not a child of God, then we certainly want to encourage you to become one this evening. If you need to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to be restored or rededicated, then please come as together we stand and sing.